Hello and welcome to another episode of the Kings of Anglia podcast. I'm Andy Warren and I'm here with a man who's looking forward to a night out with Sam Johnston, and that's Stuart Watson.
How you doing? All right? Yeah. I assume you're referring to my tweet from the Aston Villa programme on Saturday.
Yes, I am. I think many people have seen your tweet regarding the Aston Villa goalkeeper from the programme. But he does sound like a particularly interesting guy. Just a bit of background, they've done a Desert Islands Villains section in the programme, where Villa players presumably every game are asked, you know, what they'd take to the Desert Island, and some of his responses are quite exciting.
Yeah, it just caught my eye while we were sitting having our rather nice pre-match meal at Aston Villa and flicking through the programme. Yeah, he sounds like he'd be a right laugh on a night out, doesn't he, Sam Johnston? Film, I don't really watch films. Sporting memorabilia, I don't really have any, says Sam. My favourite is music, Andy. Yeah, go on.
Music, he says, I like music, but I wouldn't be too fussed with or without it.
So, a flavour of Sam Johnston there. I tweeted that, and that seems to be gaining more traction on social media than anything I tweeted about the game. So, there you go, Sam Johnston.
In defence of him, I did overhear an interview he was giving in the Mix Zone after the game at Villa Park, and he does seem like a thoroughly nice guy. So maybe he's a bit more fun than this very small programme.
I think his heart probably wasn't in this when he filled it in, I think it's fair to say.
Well, he was speaking after Ipswich Town were beaten 2-0 at Aston Villa, Stu. Two mistakes, two goals and no points was kind of the story of the game.
Yeah, pretty comprehensive defeat in the end, wasn't it? We can sit here and talk about ifs, buts and maybes again to a certain degree. Had Joe Garner's goal not been disallowed in the 16th minute, watching it again, I didn't see a whole lot wrong with it, to be honest. Johnston, the man we've just been talking about, fumbled a Martin Waghorn in swinging corner, one of many dangerous corners and set pieces he delivered throughout the game. Garner sort of poked it home, and as is always the way, goalkeepers get far too much protection, I think, in the modern game. And it was disallowed. And the frustrating thing is there's no consistency there, because there's similar sort of pressure on Bartosz Białkowski from a corner. No foul given on that occasion. And it led to Villa taking the lead. And once that first goal went in, it was pretty much the writing was on the wall, really. Ipswich didn't create a great deal from open play. Once again, have been their own worst enemy in terms of two calamitous defensive errors, which lead to both goals. And Villa, just a very effective, understatedly effective. They weren't amazingly good, Villa, but they just got the job done, didn't they, really? Three points always looked in their grasp throughout.
Yeah, the first goal came about from a corner which was reasonably well cleared initially by Joe Garner, who's so effective at that. But the ball came back in from Glenn Whelan. I think it was Luke Chambers who got a decent foot on it but didn't get it far away. And then Glenn Whelan seems to have an absolute age to head the ball from almost midway into the Ipswich half, and it goes all the way through to Albert Adoma, who's standing behind Dominic Iorfa. And he skips in and gives Bart the eyes, and that's 1-0. And like you say, from there, Ipswich didn't have an awful lot in response.
No, and the spotlight has fallen on Dominic Iorfa. I'm sure we'll talk about team selection in a minute, for being at fault for both goals. Obviously, the second is just misread his header for a long ball over the top. And the first one, I thought he was out of position, but we can't put all the blame at Dominic's door, because, as you say, Whelan's got an absolute age. I think Garner and Ward are sort of the closest men to him, and they don't really make a challenge on Whelan. The ball had dropped out of the sky, as you say. And then Skews perhaps could have done a bit better with his sort of last ditch tackle on Adoma as well. So it was just a whole host of individual errors that added up to a bad goal being conceded. And unfortunately, this is becoming a bit of a recurring theme with Ipswich at the moment.
Nick clearly wasn't happy afterwards. Appalling, he labelled it. And I think you asked him how he goes about sorting those issues, and we can hear his response now.
Well, we can defend better, can't we? In individuals, certainly, and not be naive like we were on Wednesday night. That should never have happened. A bit ruthless, and that's, you know, that's something we need to be. You know, had we come up, maybe at, had we come away and we got 3 points in our pocket from Tuesday, from Wednesday night, we'd have all felt better today. And then when you get the disappointments on the pitch, it's hard to contend with them. I have to be honest. Even as a player, you know, himself, it's tough. We just got to defend better. We'll keep working at it.
You've just got to dust yourself down, go again. You've got a tough game at Derby now on Tuesday night.
Yeah, well, that's the way it's fallen, unfortunately. It'd be nice to have a free week like other teams are going to have. But we've got Derby and we'll have to go up there and give our best. All right? Thank you.
It's a tough one for Mick, isn't it? Because these are individual errors, and he's a proud man, a proud defender who takes great pride in his side's defending, and he can't guard against these on the field. The players take responsibility, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. As you say, he picks the team, and once they cross that white line, they've got to take a bit of responsibility for some of these, and they have been individual errors. You know, manager can't do a great deal about those. It's got nothing to do with tactics and formation and setup, with Iorfa just missing a header straight through the middle and other incidents like that. So, you know, you could hear in his response there, I'm not sure he really knows the answer to it himself. You know, what can you do to, you know, we've just got to defend better was the obvious kind of response to it. If I'm being critical, I'm not sure Iorfa probably should have played, to be honest. Nobody set the world alight at right back this season, I think it's fair to say. But Spence, having had a few shaky games, I think had played his way back into form a little bit. I just didn't understand why he decided to swap his right back for a game against an in-form Aston Villa side away from home, whose danger man quite clearly was Albert Adoma on the left of midfield, oozing confidence. Obviously, his two goals take him to 11 for the season in all competitions. It just didn't seem the day to be changing your right back around.
Yeah, it's looking like another change for Tuesday, though, isn't it? At Derby, Iorfa's day ended early with what seems like a hamstring injury. Mick didn't quite know how bad that was at the time, but you'd have thought there'll be another change coming this week, another change at the back.
Yeah, will it be Spence straight back in? That would be the obvious one. The other option, of course, is to put Callum Connolly back at right back. He was brought in as a right back / centre back. Had one game there against at QPR, I think he played there.
A half at home against Bolton as well.
Yeah, right. Okay. So he's not had a huge amount of game at right back. For a while, it looked like he was perhaps going to be sent back to Everton because his game time was pretty limited, but he's found himself in this central midfield role of late and has done very well in there. I think he's dovetailed well with Cole Skews. He's been the one that's kind of battled and sat a bit deeper, and that's allowed Cole to press higher up the pitch. I think that's worked pretty well. Is it 4 games now in central midfield for Connolly, and I think he's been pretty decent in there. But with Hughes and Bishop now back, Mick's going to want to get them into midfield, so perhaps we'll see Connolly move to right back.
One of very few positives to take, I guess, from the Villa game was to see Teddy Bishop back on the field again, more miles in minutes in the legs of Emir Hughes, and we can hear from Mick again just quickly on just how happy he was to have Teddy back and the thinking behind putting him on.
Yeah, it is the bog standard sub would have been to put Spence on for me right back, but I really wanted Bish on the pitch, and Callum of course can play right back, that's what he is, but I wanted Bish to get fit, to sample 15 minutes of football at this level, as he hasn't done for a long, long time. And it's, you know, if he's come through it fine, which he has, it'll do him good, me good, the team good, the squad good, the fans good, and the club good if he's back playing, so let's hope we can keep him fit. Ellie's another one, and yeah, they'll be good. They're both good players, but they're not good when they're in the treatment room.
So, what role do you see Teddy playing at Ipswich between now and the end of the season? He's a versatile guy, but I guess a lot of fans are probably forgetting his strengths, what he can do, where he can play, and the impact that he could have after so long out.
Yeah, I was really encouraged by his little cameo, actually. He came on and there was a couple of robust slide tackles that he put in, so that's always a good sign that he's got trust in his body after pretty torrid time with injuries. Where does he play? Good question. I think if you look back at the playoff season when he burst through and was such a key man when they finished sixth, I think he played pretty much as a one of two in the middle in a fairly traditional 4-4-2 formation, wasn't it? So I prefer him through the middle. I get the feeling that Mick may use him in one of those sort of three behind the striker role if he goes with 4-2-3-1. He kind of put him on the right when he came on at the weekend, so maybe on that sort of right side of the three where McGoldrick was playing before he was injured, maybe that's his spot for the time being, perhaps.
So many strengths in that midfield, but it's just about finding the right balance, I guess, now, because there's a lot of bodies to go into not that many places. There's actually only two central midfield roles in this team at the moment, and four or five, six players that would hope to be in one of those.
Yeah, central midfield looked a position that they were well stocked in, perhaps overstocked in before the season started, and then of course we've had all these injuries mount up there. Dizel out for the season, Higham still out for a little while, but with Hughes and Bishop coming back into it, it looks like Nydam and certainly Downs are slipping down the pecking order as two young lads. Rightly or wrongly, Kevin Brew is ahead of them, it would appear, with him being on the bench at the weekend. So who does he play? I think Skews is a nailed on starter under Mick, and I know people will debate that till the cows come home. Perhaps he won't be such a nailed on starter. Perhaps his role and position in the team comes under a little bit more scrutiny, but I can't see it with Mick. So who plays alongside Skews in that other role? Let's not forget that Tom Adeyemi comes back into the equation, hopefully sooner rather than later. So yeah, it's good to have options. It's a nice selection headache for Mick to have. He's kind of hinted that he would have started the season probably with a Skews, Hughes, Adeyemi midfield three. I think that's what he had in his mind when he put that squad together over the summer. But of course he's got this 4-2-3-1 system at the moment, so where do they all fit into that remains to be seen.
Yeah, we will see. You mentioned scrutiny over Cole Skews there, and you're right, I think that scrutiny will go on for as long as he's at the club. But another guy who seems to be under intense scrutiny at the moment is Freddie Sears, who's finding goals incredibly hard to come by, and form as well seems to not quite be where he wants it to be.
Yeah, I have to say I feel sorry for Freddie at the moment. It's been sad to kind of see his confidence ebb away. We've discussed this, I think, in several videos and podcasts and things so far. It's well documented. He came in, was full of belief as a striker from Colchester, scored plenty of goals, and unfortunately he's kind of been worked into the ground in a wide role. Victim of his own selflessness. He, you know, whatever you say about Freddie, he'll go and graft and do you a job and all
you
the rest of
you
it.
You can't question that, can you?
Never.
You can't question his fitness, you can't question his commitment and his role as a team player. That can't be in doubt.
No, and you've written a piece, you know, about him today, a comment piece that I've just been reading before coming in here. And I think the word that hits the nail on the head that you used is his instinct has kind of gone. And I think as a striker, when you start to overthink things, when he's through on goal one-on-one, perhaps he's not working on instinct, he's overthinking things, and yeah, he just looked a little bit lost on Saturday, sort of chasing up and down and without really sort of impacting the game, and I don't really know how that's going to sort of turn around, really, unless he gets a run up front, or you know, you suggested maybe in the 23s could get his belief back, but yeah, I just feel a bit sorry for him because I just don't think his strengths are being fully utilised there.
I spoke to Jonas Knudsen after the game at Villa on Saturday, and he he spoke glowingly, as he has before, about Freddie and his favoured left side partner, and he praised the work that he did, and he's backed Freddie to, you know, if he can just get a goal from somewhere, that the goals may well come. And we'll just hear from Jonas now.
Yeah, he's an unbelievable player under that, and I like to play with him, and I think we have a good combination together. I think we have seen that, and I like to play with him on the left because we know each other well, and then it's when you have a good relationship, you also work hard for each other on the pitch. But you also will do that. But he's a good player, and of course you know what a player he is, and he'll get some goals, and I only think he needs a goal and a little bit of luck, because then definitely he'll start scoring. So I enjoy to play with him. So I'm also enjoying to play with Besson.
Yeah, it must be nice as a fullback though to have Freddie, who's constantly up and down. He's all over the place, isn't he? The energy that he has.
Yeah, he's always working hard, and he gives all he can, and then. And you know, football is about confidence. And when you get a bit of luck, get a goal or something, maybe get a bit more confidence. But you see, he done well when he came on the other day, and he deserves to start today. So we'll see. I think he'll get a goal soon.
Well, obviously, we hope Jonas is right, because Ipswich team needs a firing Freddie Sears. That David McGoldrick's injury proves that if they're going to play these formations, Freddie Sears has got a real part to play in this, and it would do everyone good if he could find that form again.
Yeah, it's just a real conundrum. We touched upon it in midfield, where how best to utilise the strengths of these various players, and I think one system suits certain players and another system suits other players, and it's just trying to get the best out of people. I remember when I spoke to Mark Lawrenson in the summer about Joe Garner when he signed. Obviously Mark's a huge Preston fan, and he said that Garner would be best utilised in a front two, you know, a big man little man type partnership. I know Garner's not the biggest, but he plays that sort of role, doesn't he, in terms of battling and occupying centre backs. And you know, he was talking about him and Beckford being such an amazing partnership for Preston in League One, and Garner being a good foil for someone, and he looked through the Town squad at that moment and said Garner and Sears, I could see that being a good partnership. So maybe Freddie further up alongside Garner would work, but then that has a knock-on effect in terms of where does Waghorn then fit into that system, and where does McGoldrick and Selina fit into that sort of system. So I think, you know, we've seen that with McGoldrick and Waghorn. People were questioning why McGoldrick was playing out wide, and I was among those at the time. But I think I've looked at it in hindsight, and I think the reason they've done that is because Waghorn wasn't really working on the right. There was a lot of scrutiny as to the on the right back position, and the goals, a lot of goals being conceded down that right hand side, and everyone was talking about Spence and Iorfa and all the rest of it. But I don't think Waghorn was offering them a great deal of protection at that time. And that's probably why we've seen Waghorn moved into a central role and why McGoldrick was put out wide. So it's about getting the best out of the players you've got. And unfortunately, doing what's good for one player isn't necessarily what's right for another.
He's got a tough puzzle to put together as well, isn't he? Because you've got 11 players that you could play, and you've got a box full of 25 puzzle pieces, and somehow you've got to put this puzzle together to make it look like a picture at the end, and you've got to sort through all these different pieces. It's a proper conundrum for Mick, but it's one that he's going to be working for the rest of the season to get it right. And that next attempt at the puzzle will come at Derby, where I imagine there'll be some more changes and a couple of familiar faces in the opposition ranks, which should really be filling Ipswich with a little bit of fear heading to a place where they actually have a ridiculously good away record.
Yeah, happy hunting ground, isn't it? Pride Park, or the iPro Stadium, as we must call it these days. 9 unbeaten, I think, stretches right back to 2006. A lot of games stick in the memory. Carlos Edwards smash and grab there a few years back. Luke Varney's goal slipping through the goalkeeper's hands. The 4-4 draw in there, yeah. 4-1 up at half time that day. But this does look a tough task, and you mentioned a couple of names there. Tom Lawrence, former Lone Star, and Nemesis Nugent, who always seems to score against Ipswich.
I think we're at 15 in 15 for Nugent. I'll have to check my maths on that one, but I think that's where we're at. 15 in 15 against Ipswich. But no goal for him against Ipswich in 2 years.
Is that right?
So maybe... Well, maybe he's forgotten how to do it.
Yeah, we talked about the curse of Jordan Rhodes, and he's now gone three games without a goal against Ipswich, so hopefully this is another curse that is coming to an end. But I look at that Derby side. They won 3-0 at Middlesbrough on Saturday to leapfrog them into the playoff places. Matej Vidra scored a hat-trick. Gary Rowett held him as the best number 10 in the division after that. But, you know, Lawrence as well, Vyman, Huddleston and Ledley is a central midfield duo. Looking at their bench, they had Chris Martin, Johnny Russell, George Thorne, Andre Wisdom. That they were all on the bench on Saturday. So it's a tough ask for Ipswich, no doubt about it. And I can't say I'm full of confidence because... I look at Ipswich's form and I think it's 14 points from 14 games now, which a point per game is relegation form. There's no getting away from that. I don't think there's any danger at all of Ipswich getting dragged into a dogfight, but I think increasingly we'll be not talking about potential of a top six, and mid-table is looking more and more likely.
Mm. Worryingly, you can picture Tom Lawrence taking aim from 25, 30 yards and firing the ball in the back of the net, can't you? I can certainly picture that in my mind. I can see him doing it, and then, you know, the Ipswich fans maybe might turn on him a little if he celebrates, depending where he scores it. But it has got all the ingredients for a really long night for Ipswich. But this is when they pull them out, isn't it? This is when they shock you and yeah. Do everything they shouldn't do.
We always have to throw that caveat in, don't we? Because... as you say, I think Mick McCarthy, the best is brought out in him when it's backs to the wall time, and I think that then filters down to his players as well. We saw it last season when things were really starting to unravel, that tough-looking February came around and everyone thought, you know, winced when those games came around and they pulled it out the bag then, so who's to say they won't now? But Derby away, followed by Forest at home, who are going well. That stat about all the points coming against bottom half sides is still in play at the moment. All 26 points against bottom half sides. Still got Wolves, Derby, Middlesbrough and Forest to play, who are all up there. So, as I keep saying, I think by the time we've played everybody once, we'll have a decent indication of the table. And I think Ipswich's natural place in that, unfortunately, is looking somewhere in the middle of the pack.
I was about to move us on to our football room 101, and one thing I will put in room 101 is being in the Championship, because it's getting a bit dull. But this will be our second entry to football room 101, where we get rid of some of the things that annoy us and you about football. The first one last week saw a narrow victory for you, Stu, on our online poll. Presentation jackets have made it in ahead of my choice, which I can't even remember what it was. What was my choice?
One man kickoff.
I hate them that much. I've blanked them from my mind. But 52% to 48% in our online poll in this one. But what are you putting forward this week?
This week I am going to offer up people who film lots of football matches on their phones or iPads, even worse. Why? I widen this to gigs, music gigs, general things. Just enjoy the moment. Watch the game with your own eyes. The worst is when it's someone taking a corner and the television cameras close in on the guy taking a corner, and there's about half a dozen people all filming the corner taker on their phone. And it makes me think, when are they going to watch that back? When are they going to watch back somebody taking a corner kick on their phone? Don't understand it. I see now on YouTube that you've got people putting together entire highlights of themselves. A video watching themselves watching the game on a selfie stick or something.
yeah, just don't understand it. Just watch the game.
If you've paid to get in, why are you spending that time filming yourself? I guess they're trying, when they're filming a corner, are they trying to hope, are they hoping it's a goal and they can be the documentation of that goal?
Maybe. Yeah. And to be fair, we've embedded fans' videos sometimes, and you can get some nice like celebration ones of people going crazy in the way end, or a penalty being scored or whatever. But it's not for me.
It's probably not for people sitting behind them either, because you're going to get your view. Imagine having your view blocked off a goal by a bloke holding out his iPad. How annoying. My entry is also an entry courtesy of Joe Fares on Twitter. I saw his suggestion, and it instantly riled me and reminded me that I really dislike this. Unnecessary use of away kits. And the Premier League are the most guilty for this, particularly Manchester City and Chelsea, who will go away to teams. I think Man City did it at Arsenal and wore black. Why? Of all the things in football that are melting away, traditions disappearing as money takes hold, the one thing that will never go, unless you're a Cardiff fan, is kit and the colours and your team's colours. So why on earth are teams like Manchester City going to put teams that wear red and wearing black or purple? Doesn't make sense to me. Thankfully, Ipswich don't really do this. They've had their own away kit issues in recent years, but they don't. If
so much so that I think the Barcelona kit got about two outings, didn't it? In its one official year as the away kit. But
Mick a blue and white man, though, isn't he? If he
Mick hates stripes. There's a little podcast exclusive for you. I've been told that Mick hates stripes and was seething when a stripy away kit was put forward.
Very
so
wow.
I don't think we'll be seeing any more stripes anytime soon. He's a plain man, I'm told.
Interesting. While Sunderland manager a little awkward then.
Yeah,
with his team in stripes.
Yeah, I didn't
week.
Think about that. It's just money talks, unfortunately, isn't it? When they're trying to flog replica football kits at 40, 50 quid a pop, I guess they've got to justify their usage. Unnecessary third kits, we can widen that debate to as well. Why are clubs producing third kits that never see the light of day?
They back themselves into a corner with this, and I think Ipswich have done that. Where, and it's normally, this usually boils down to it all being Crystal Palace's fault, is my default answer, because they have red and blue, and that just causes all kinds of trouble for, especially in the Championship where you've got a lot of red and blue teams.
Yeah.
But why do third kits even exist in general? Just get an away kit that's good, different colour. Anyway. We'll put this out to the vote, and you can have your say as usual. And if you've got any that you want to chuck in room 101, which is currently only occupied by presentation jackets, then get in touch. We'll tweet out the poll, and you can have your say. But other than that, Stu, I think we're on to a week of Derby followed by Nottingham Forest, as we've discussed. So we'll be back next week, and we can hopefully be dissecting a couple of victories. And that's it for this episode. Thanks very much for listening. Remember to spread the word, subscribe on iTunes. You can listen through Audioboom and through our website as well, where you will find all the Ipswich Town news, views, opinions, interviews, action and reaction from every Ipswich Town game. Safe travel to anybody going to Derby on Tuesday night, or safe travel home if you're listening on the way home, and we'll be back soon.